a new day. Yes, it is.
For 12 Pack Radio. Get excited, y'all.
Welcome back, everyone, to 12 Pack Radio, your podcast source for Pac-12 football news, the home of the BetaRank College Football Statistical Model. And this is a Sharp College Football podcast, sharpcollegefootball.com. Thank you for joining us. This is Brian Conger. There is a Pac-12 freaking team in the national championship of the world in college football. And we are so excited to break down Washington's win over Texas and talk about what they have coming up against Michigan. Rob, how are you? This is a new feeling, you know, it's like, what is this? I don't know what this.
After years of the wilderness, right? Of like just begging a Pac-12 team to like put it together and make it to the playoff after like Washington's last playoff visit, 2016 was like the last, that's a long time ago in college football time. And no one in the Pac-12 getting it together, finally getting a team in. And not only do they get in, they win their semifinal, and now they get a chance to play for the title. And what is, I mean, truly, I feel like maybe my best college football take this year was like that we would not have juggernauts like 2021 or 2022 Georgia, and that it would be a very wide open year for the title. Like, Washington's absolutely could win this game. Like, this is not, they are not TCU from last year. Like, they're not a huge underdog. This is a game that they could win.
Absolutely. I kind of felt like it was the Pac-12 like getting puberty. They're like, oh, what are these feelings? What is this? And then immediately walking in front of a train, right? Like, that's basically the last year of the Pac-12's existence is, having these changes happen to their body and then immediately not existing. I mean, let's just talk about the game, and then maybe we can go into some of the transfer for things. I had such a great time watching both playoff games. I mean, I really want to focus the majority of the time on Washington's win over Texas. A couple big picture things stood out to me. The first was, like, I really hadn't watched a lot of Texas football. You know, normally we watch mostly Pac-12 games, and then we'll kind of watch the big games as they go. Tell me what you think about this. The play calling, in terms of, maybe it was just window dressing, but I thought in terms of creativity, we've watched basically every Washington football game that wasn't on Peacock this year, or at least I have. And Kalen DeBoer's, him and his offensive staff, there have been multiple times in multiple big moments where they have called a play that just goes, that's why you pay that guy. That was an awesome play. That guy was wide the F open, or you switched motion and you got somebody coming the other way and it totally confused the defense in a way where other coaches do that. But they don't do it in the way Kalen DeBoer does. I know Steve Sarkisian is a great play caller. I understand that. I thought watching both of them go to work at the same time, there was one coaching staff that I thought was significantly more interesting and creative, just in, at least in terms of movement and shifts and stuff, than the other. And it's funny because the score is the same. So it's not like Sarkisian wasn't calling good plays. I just saw a visible difference in that game where I just thought, like, wow, like this is the top of the top in terms of offensive play calling. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah. I mean, Texas has a good defense. Like, now their defensive backs are good. They're not great. Like, and they're not as good as Michigan's, which is going to make this game fun, that we're coming into. But I thought they had just a superb offensive game plan. I thought the play calling was excellent. And everyone executed it perfectly. Right. I mean, like, now those are all of those things coming together is hard to do, but they did it. I mean, there were some really, really, I mean, like on some of those, like deep passes that they were hitting, you know, they were called at the right times. They got, you know, single coverage, from Texas in there, and they were able to connect. I mean, Penix was lights out. Yeah. I mean, that was the other part of this. I mean, like some of this works, you look great because Penix was just on, with his ball placement. So yeah, absolutely. I mean, I would also say with Sark, like, I mean, like, and I would like, there's a couple games he's had this year, like the Alabama game. He had a really, really good game plan. I thought he had a good game plan here. I think if you flip quarterbacks, Texas wins easily. right? Like I think yours was like yours is hesitant and
he was bad. Yeah. He missed multiple throws.
I like, know. Poorly. And Washington's defense is better than middle of the Power Five, but this still isn't a great defense. And they should have been able to put more up. But I also think that Sark, even though he doesn't fully trust Ewers, I think he Sark in this current like incarnation of Texas does like to stay away from having tendencies and does like to be a bit more balanced. And they ran the ball real well. Yeah. They ran the ball real well against Washington. And if it weren't for truthfully, I mean Texas has a chance to win this on the last play. But Texas doesn't fumble twice, you know, like if they only fumble once, they probably win the game. You know, like that, like Washington, like, look, and I say, this is no knock on Washington. Every team that wins the national title has a combination of like skill and luck, like to get through a season like this requires skill and luck. Everybody's got a bit of a luck, you know, like finishing plus one on turnovers is not the same thing as like Arizona finishing plus five on turnovers. Like
with one shooting 17 feet into the air, I mean, on like, the 5 yard line.
Yeah. Right. But fumbles in particular are luck driven, right? Like knocking the ball out. Like it blows my mind when people are like, oh, that was a real good play. He knew how to do that. Right. And it's just like, oh, his helmet landed right on the ball, even though his head's down. And you're like, man, I don't think so. You know, that is pure luck. And then like where the ball bounces and who lands on it is pretty random. Though who comes out of the pile with the ball, maybe a little less random. That may just be who's meanest. But I think with this team, like I do think that Washington came in with the superior quarterback and the superior game plan. Like they said, now that said, like, again, like I would come back to like, if you took for Sark and put that running game and combine that with a quarterback that wasn't indecisive and had better ball placement, like Texas probably wins going away, but they have Quinn Ewers and like, you don't get to trade quarterbacks in college football. And so like Washington was able to come away with the win. And it should, I mean, like that on its own, I mean, like the fact that they were able to go in, and I thought they did have such a good game plan and everybody really knew exactly where they needed to be and exactly what to execute. Like this is the Washington that like when we were talking about like when they were just in the doldrums in that back half of the season and they're like just unable, like they're playing way too close with some bad football teams. It's like, where did Washington go? Right. And then they show back up again in the Pac-12 title game. You know, with this kind of with this kind of focus and this kind of execution, and they show up again here, like, you know, that does give you, you know, some pot, like the sort of like, you are who you are. It will eventually catch up. Like, you know, like you can't live on a knife's edge. Like it will eventually catch up with you. Right. Like maybe like now, maybe it won't, but the, it should give you some confidence. I think that Washington can pull it off, you know, coming into this one.
Yeah. I mean, on the offensive side, you know, it's funny. I live in the state of Washington, and there's a lot of Seahawks fans. And I take the next generation stats with a lot of many grains of salt. And there's one thing that they were doing where they're saying that Trent Lockett and the guy that's playing Russell Wilson they have a perfect record in terms of throwing and catching. And then I quickly look up like, has Russell Wilson missed a pass to Trent Lockett? And he missed many of them. So I have no idea what that stat is. Like, it seems like they pulled it out of like a hat. But I think the point they were making is often they connected and often they were really good. And I thought that Michael Penix had one of the best performances I have ever seen of a college football quarterback. Like the throws that he made were so incredibly accurate and he missed a few.
Right.
But some of those were throwaways. A couple were dropped. Like, I can't remember a pass that he threw poorly. That entire game with that defensive line right down his throat. I was trying to think, like, who's the last quarterback that I had so much joy watching play the game of football? And it's Andrew Luck. Like, watching Andrew Luck move in and out of the pocket and just slip across these defensive ends, defensive tackles, and then just gun it down to a tight end is the closest that I've ever seen.
In Burrow, right? Like that 2 a year in 20, the COVID year, like that, that Sark offense was unbelievable. And the Burrow offense was just, because that 2019 LSU offensive line won the Moore Award for like best offensive line, and they weren't that good. Like, it was purely that like Burrow made the reads quickly and got the ball out, right? So like they looked really good.
I meant a Pac-12.
The last time I think Luck might be the guy that like was the last time that somebody I think really understood the offense that he was in and what was being asked of him as well. And like, I mean, cause like Penix knows exactly where he needs to go with the ball, right? Like that's like, in some ways he's not having to think when he's doing his reads because he just knows it. Right. And that kind of decision. And then like, man, the ability to just, he hit some windows. He hit some passing windows on this one that were just fantastic.
I'm wondering, I guess the last impression that I had was how bad Quinn Ewers was. Like he was bad. Yeah. And if I knew that was what was showing up, I think I would have bet even more. I mean, I had a future on Texas, and so I hedged and took the Huskies straight up, and that worked out. But I probably would have hedged even more if I knew that was the Quinn Ewers that was going to show up in that game. Like, just it was night and day comparatively in terms of what Texas was able to do, not only with Ewers, but I thought the wide receivers, they had a couple guys that really showed up, but like Whittington, I was like, kind of like, all right, fine. Yeah. I mean, just him compared to, and you're right, like, because Penix hit some windows for sure, but also having all three wide receivers healthy and really solid. I mean, holy smokes, this offense is so fun, minus the running game.
Right.
Because they could not do any. Was it 21 for 49? 21 attempts, 49 yards for Dylan Johnson. He had the two touchdowns, but like they couldn't do anything on the ground.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think for Ewers, like this was, and I said this, I think, in previewing Texas coming into this year, like Texas, because it has Sark as a play caller, because of the talent, because it has Kwiatkowski as the defensive play caller, has a really high potential ceiling, right? But Ewers is the cap on that ceiling. Like, if he doesn't progress from what he was the year before, like, they're not going to progress. And he only progressed a little, I feel like, off of what we saw the year before. And he was really bad in this game. And I say that is like, in particular versus the, like, and this is again, like, let's be honest about what Washington's defense is against. A Washington defense that you can get yards and you can get big plays against, right? Like, they have been susceptible to giving up big plays this year. They have, you know, they you can carve them up a little bit in the passing game too. They're good. They're not great. And Ewers should have had better numbers, and he just didn't. And I don't want to say this is like, I mean, look, Washington did find a way to get some pressure on him at times in this game, and that was a really good sign for them. But I do think that like one of the problems was just like, and truly too, I mean, like, Worthy was like the only guy you felt like you had to cover for Texas, right? And that's, I mean, that makes, I mean, that's a difficult assignment, I think, you know, if you're Ewers. But I'm interested. I don't know. I mean, like, I know he's coming back. I'm just sort of interested to, like, he doesn't get a lot better. How long does he keep that job with Arch Manning behind him? Right. Yeah. Like,
well, they even, anyway. And I knew they were going to do this. They show Arch Manning with his helmet on. Like, oh, Arch Manning's warming up. I'm like, Arch Manning is not going to see a second of this game. They tease it like three times, and I just like,
I know,
you can hear my eyes rolling back in my head as those camera shots were happening.
Well, I mean, because there was a point in that game where it looked like Texas was out of the game.
Yeah.
Right. And then they came roaring back. But I mean, I think that, like, I mean, it is an interesting, because like Texas played a flawed game, and they played, you know, and Ewers in particular played a really flawed game. You know, but still, like I said, like, Texas doesn't fumble the ball away one additional time. Like, they probably walk away from this game with a win. You know, it was a tight game. I mean, like, truly, like, the other game was a tight game too, right? Like, Michigan, I mean, speaking of, like, Michigan played with their food against Alabama.
Yeah, they did.
Like,
yeah.
Michigan, like, I mean, we talk about a team, like, I mean, we talk about Washington having that stretch of, like, playing, I mean, truly, you could argue, playing down to the level of the competition that they were against. But Michigan was like that score going to overtime. I think a lot of people came away from that thinking like that this is actually should like these two teams are really close. Like I came away from that game just thinking like if Michigan's offense doesn't just go to sleep in the third and beginning of the fourth quarter, like Michigan should have walked away with that game. Like Alabama's offense couldn't do anything.
Yeah, or if Michigan could like field a punt. Like at
any yeah, time. I mean Michigan did some dumb. Michigan did some real dumb. On top of it, right? But like, yeah, I mean, these both ended up looking like close games. Michigan, I felt like you can't. I think most people, and they should, come away from that game with like Michigan was very much the better team on the field. I mean, like Nick Saban was talking about it. Like, I mean, they couldn't do anything offensively, and then it just ended up like Michigan was able to pull it out in the end. Like Texas and Washington are just closer teams, right? And they, you know, like they played a closer game. I don't think you're not going to beat Washington when they're playing like they did with Quinn Ewers playing like he did.
Oh no. I mean, one other thing to mention, if at least on my end, was like Braylon Trice urinated on every tree in that backfield. Like he marked his territory wherever.
Yeah. Yeah. He did get back. Yeah.
Like he had such a good game and it was great. I mean, like he's been somebody that's always been on the radar. And I know ZTF has gotten more attention because of that one COVID year, but like Trice really showed why he's the guy. And it was really exciting to see him just get in that backfield. I know the offensive line for Texas is pretty good. And just to be able to put pressure, was important. And frankly, I thought that,
I mean, he helped kill some drives. I mean, like and it was, what makes this matchup, I think in particular, so interesting is that Texas did run the ball so well. Right. Yeah. And like that, you're not with Michigan. You ain't worried about the passing game,
I guess like one more thing. I don't care about NFL draft stock. Doesn't matter to me. It was for me, it's more when people talk about the good quarterbacks in the, and I know Penix was injured for like half the season. So that's why he kind of fell out of the conversation. It was interesting. People going like, oh, this Penix fellow is pretty good. It's like, yeah, he is. He's excellent.
Right.
I guess we could talk about this when we talk about Michigan, but I mean, like Michigan's quarterback, Alabama's quarterback, Texas's quarterback. And then you take a look at what happened in the Pac-12, just as a conference, since this is still a Pac-12 show, just having that many quarterbacks be able to just ball out. And it was interesting because I was looking at the quarterbacks for the SEC next year and they suck. Like, I mean, there could be some freshmen that step up.
It's Beck. I mean, now Beck at Georgia is good.
Yeah. Yes, that's true. That's very true.
Like, and I like Georgia to continue to have a pretty good offense, even with Mike Bobo calling plays.
Yeah, and to be fair, I thought the Tennessee quarterback looked pretty good against Iowa.
Dude, if he balls out, that's the thing. Is like that Tennessee offense suddenly fell off, but like Heupel still got it as a play caller. Like the Tennessee is a team that you will have to continue to keep an eye on.
That's right. Yeah, because it's funny because Ole Miss is going all in the portal to try to make it to the playoff. And I really think Tennessee is the team to look out for. Yeah. Like, can Jackson Dart get you to the playoff? I mean, maybe.
Right.
But like, I'm not super, super excited about that. Anything else on this game before we talk a few other things and then go into the preview?
No. It's fun to be able to come in and talk about like an outstanding performance by a Pac-12 team on the big stage, right? Like, I mean, to really go out there and set this up, like I'm so pumped to see that. And this matchup is a ton of fun. It is truly a contrast of styles, right? Like to get to see here.
Yeah, no, absolutely. All right, let's talk a few more things, go through a couple Pac-12 games, maybe some transfer stuff, and let's do it right after this.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
All right, we're back. And there were other games that happened, obviously. Oregon beat the tar out of Liberty. Notre Dame beat the tar out of Oregon State.
The Liberty one for Oregon was surprising because Chadwell's got a good offense and like most everybody was still in for that bowl game. Not that Oregon put up 45, that I was expecting, that Liberty only put up 6. That was a really good performance for the Oregon D, even as crazy and dumb as bowl games are.
That was impressive. I think one of the things that's interesting is, right, obviously they're moving to the Big Ten and you're taking a look at some of the competition. I do think, you know, I'm curious what Washington looks like next year. They have a lot of guys that'll probably move on. They had a lot of seniors. Yeah. But one of the things that we had a listener that was talking about, I think we were going into the depth of Washington and the recruiting cycle. They did bring in like a high 4 or 5 ish star freshman. So I know you have the Mississippi transfer, but they do have somebody behind him that's interesting. So we'll see what that looks like. But Oregon, I mean, Oregon does look like the team that is ready for prime time when they get to the Big Ten. So that was
Oregon feels like a roster that's been building. Like, I mean, I will say like the difference between DeBoer and Lanning, if you were going to put it like, is like Lanning may still be figuring out some of the being a head coach from like the game management stuff and like the hiring and everything like that. But like he has definitely gone at roster building head on, you know, like and Oregon, like apps and using the Nike bankroll to his advantage. Right. But they probably come into the big, I mean, like they probably come into the Big Ten next year with like the best returning quarterback. I mean, the best quarterback, you know, not return. I mean, I guess he's not returning to Oregon, but the best quarterback coming in.
Yeah, I try not to take too much from bowl games. This one I did put a little bit of weight into just because both teams brought back most of their guys. And I was curious to see if Oregon would lay an egg against a team that did have a dangerous offense and could you know, put up some points if they really wanted to. They absolutely did not. They had the touchdown at the beginning of the game, and then that was it. And I mean, like, that's pretty impressive. Notre Dame 40, Oregon State 8. I'm more look. Nobody played in this game for Oregon, for neither team, basically. And this isn't based on the bowl game. I'm just really worried about Oregon State next year. A lot of players are leaving. They have an exodus of, they're going to the Mountain West. Like, this is one of those teams that could collapse very quickly and just be a Mountain West team for the rest of existence.
They're down to one returning starter right now. I mean, on defense. I mean, that's rough. What? Yeah. I mean, I feel horrible for B fans in this and Coug fans. Like, but the Cougs have not been, I mean, keeping your coach helps. Jonathan Smith leaving timed with this was horrendous timing for the Beavs.
Yeah. And you got a defensive coordinator as your head coach. Like, sometimes that works, sometimes it's great, it's like obviously Oregon, but sometimes you get really stuck on that bully ball and try to time of possession.
I mean, Lanning had one of the best hires of the offseason in Will Stein. I mean, Will Stein absolutely went out with that Oregon offense, but Gulbranson's never called plays, so we'll see.
Arizona 38, Oklahoma 24. This game was super
fun. It was fun. Look, I mean, it was super fun.
You're talking about not reading into a bowl game. Was it 5 or 6 turnovers?
It was 6 turnovers. They were +5 on turnovers.
Yeah, they came out hot. I mean, 10-0 and really stuck it to Oklahoma. Yeah. And then you could see the limits of Arizona as a national power, like, and as a playoff contender. Oklahoma is not the best team in the Big 12, but they just shoved around. And look, I realized Jordan Morgan wasn't in the offensive line, but they didn't have the physicality. But there's a big win for Arizona. Like, for that program, it's great.
Right.
Get the bowl win, 10 wins, you beat Oklahoma. I'm just trying to pump the brakes for Arizona fans. Like, you play that game 10 times, I think Oklahoma wins probably twice or eight times out of 10.
That would be at least my guess. I mean, like that was, I mean, I had people on Twitter being like, Arizona won, it's the final score. Clearly they outplayed them. And I'm like, you guys don't know ball, right? Like, I mean, like the, you know, like, and I mean, to be frank, like, I think Arizona, like, if we go back, like, Arizona was better than Mississippi State. Arizona just turned the ball over 5 times in the first half. When you do that, it's really hard to win the football game. For Oklahoma, I mean, like, Arizona couldn't run the ball. They couldn't pass protect. And they couldn't stop the run and somehow they won, you know, like the magic of how they won is being +5 on turnovers and those kind of games. I mean, like I this is one of those things that I just think like you either understand this and you understand how football works or you don't understand this and you'll spend your life talking about football, but not understanding football. And that is the, like the turnovers. There is a component where that is related to team skill and there is a random component and getting +5 on turnovers in a game doesn't happen very often. Right.
Yeah, like I would like, and I completely agree with you. In defense of some of those folks, like some of those intercept, like the first interception was a great play. Like
yeah, you read that. Some of these are great. Like they're great plays. They're great football plays, but still. Right. Like, I mean, like turnovers often are great football plays, right? Like they're not just like, I mean, they're not, they don't always look like just dumb happenstance, right? Like, and that, like, it's that level of like the fact that they were in the position, like, you know, some of those throws were bad. Some of them were fumbles, you know, like, you know, yes. Like, I mean, Arizona fans should be ecstatic at the way this team turned it around and getting a win over Oklahoma in what our bowl games are just a fluky mess anyway. Just take it, you know, and run with it. But like I had somebody try to tell me, I was at the Arizona Bowl for Wyoming Toledo. And like, I had somebody try to tell me like that defense carried that team all year. I'm like, what are you talking about? Like that was an offensive first team. Like the defense improved a lot, but like it was the offense that was really good. And then he's like, well, that quarterback's not any good. I'm like, what are you talking about? And he's like, well, he's not going to play in the NFL. I'm like,
who cares? I don't care.
This is college, right? He's still got some time.
Yeah. I mean, it was the big win for the Cats. Take the 10 wins.
Take it.
A lot of players coming back. And it's just a great season all around. Like, and what a turnaround, right? From just being one of the worst teams in the Pac-12 in multiple eras, not just this era, but multiple times, to winning 10 games and having a good base to build
from. Yeah. I mean, and they go into the Big 12 along with Utah and K-State, you know, as like one of the favorites into next season because they've got arguably one of the best returning starters in college football at quarterback and Noah Fifita. Like wild.
Yeah. The game that really did surprise me was USC. I mean, yes. So what do you take from bowl games? I just want to say this. I've seen Miller Moss play multiple times. I don't know if that's what you, if USC fans are like, yes, we found our man. I'm worried about that because I just don't think he's that. I think he had a good game against a decent defense in a bowl game. And if you're going to pin your hopes on the Miller Moss show, I would encourage caution on that front. I don't know if he's the answer, but he looked great in this game. He was awesome. He was slinging darts. He was avoiding coverage, but I don't know if that's really who you're going to get for a full year if you're USC moving into the Big Ten.
And Louisville struggled more defending the pass than they have the run this season. I mean, they do have a pretty good defense at number 13 overall, but they were at number 6 in effective rush versus 20 in effective pass. It was also, I mean, like USC, a bunch of wide receivers that hadn't played all season. I mean, it's just, I don't take a lot from bowl games. I put zero stock in whatever happened to Florida State.
Right. Well, yeah, a lot happened to him.
But right, yeah, I mean, like, but that clearly wasn't the team that played all year, you know. And I like, I just I what I think was interesting though is like USC has suddenly like fallen, like after that Miller Moss performance, like they've suddenly fallen out of the conversation on like getting a transfer QB.
Yeah.
And that
worried me.
That was probably like the biggest thing. Cause like they were, you know, like there was the Will Howard chatter and now he's going to Ohio State, which I mean, I'm at the gym this morning and like Ohio State fans are like talking themselves to Will Howard. I'm like, ooh, buddy, don't ask him to throw it 15 yards down the field. But like the fact that they're out of the Will Howard conversation, I haven't heard anything about them with like Cam Ward, who's like the one big quarterback still running around out there. Maybe that's
well, he's going pro. He's out.
He's out.
Right. Isn't he going to the NFL? Oh, he might be. And that was, yeah. That's what I, yeah.
So in that, I mean, unless somebody offers him a ton, I don't know, but like, that's like, I just kind of feel like it's for USC. Like it truly might be Miller Moss time. At quarterback next season. And look, like you can take the sunny view and look at the bowl game, and you could take the less sunny view and look at the play up to that point. But I mean, we'll see. I mean, I feel USC having a competent defensive coordinator, I think, is probably the biggest thing for them. I think Miller Moss, like, he probably doesn't have like a top five offensive ceiling in college football for them. But I think with Lincoln Riley there and Cliff Kingsbury coaching him, he can probably get them into like a top 15 offense. If the defense is better, they can probably be a top 25 football team next season, maybe if you're a USC fan makes you happy. But I feel like Lincoln Riley could end up with like some heat next year.
Yeah, I mean, if they do, I mean, they were 7-5 this year, right? Or they do eight, they won eight, they won the Louisville game, but 8-5, I mean, two years, I don't know. Well, we'll take a look at them moving into the Big Ten. Anything else before we break down the national title game?
No, I mean, it was a fun, fluky bowl season.
Yeah, it's going to get worse.
For everyone except Oregon State, it was not fun for the Beavs.
No, wait. So one more thing.
And Utah, not great for Utah either.
No, Lord Almighty, that was awful. I listened to the Split Zone Duo on the Rose Bowl, and I found just the I forget which. I think it was Stephen Godfrey just went on this rant on the Rose Bowl, and I just thought it was so over the top and so ridiculous. But I'm curious what you thought about. Like, he basically, you know, blamed the Rose Bowl for like holding back a lot of stuff, which they have. But as I watched that game, and like, I think the Rose Bowl sucks. Like the actual stadium itself, like it's not a good stadium to watch a football. It's a good stadium to experience a football game, but to watch it, it's this really wide bowl. All the seats are bad. You have to park on the golf course.
If you can get seating if you can get parking on the golf course, right? Like that's right. You yeah. may be in a lot and being shuttled all the way over.
That's right. Done that too. With all that said, like watching the game again in an era where there is so many sterile football stadiums and everything is played that's just completely astroturf and inorganic, and oh, we're in Jerry World. Right. Oh, great. Look at this big screen. Or when the national championship is in Houston, like who cares? Like, you know, like it, I think there are a few things in college football that make college football what it is. And I do think the Rose, like, look, I grew up in Orange County. I was never a huge like proponent of, oh, the Rose Bowl is the greatest thing ever, but it did have good. It always had good matchups.
Yeah.
The Pac-12 Big Ten, it has this place in college football. And I do think it deserves to push back on some stuff, right? Because like things are becoming much more corporate and sterile, and it's one of the few like relics left in the sport that has some character to it. I'm curious what you think.
No, I thought that was ridiculous. I mean, look, like the Rose Bowl, you know, held up the playoff and all of that. Absolutely. Holding out for tradition. But I do think that there's a case for look, I think the Rose Bowl is a terrible stadium for the UCLA Bruins, right? Like, it is so far from their camp. Like, it is a bad home stadium for them. But I mean, like, if you look at like, you know, like the Orange Bowl, like moving, you know, to the Dolphins stadium, like no one cares. Yes, of course, like the old days when the Orange Bowl would get like the, you know, a likely undefeated Big 12 champion, you know, and then I usually think they had like they could make another selection that they could get anybody they could get with. Those were great games, right? Like those were really good games that they could get at the Orange Bowl. But the Orange Bowl itself felt cool, right? Like, and, itself had like a storied history. Like, I do think that like one of the things to your point is that look, you know, and the ESPN commercials are kind of dumb, but they're kind of true. And that, like, this is a narrative. And I'm always like, I feel like we're always like either pushing back or trying to correct people with narratives and things like that. But it is like, it's a story, like, you know, like part of story is setting, right? Like like a major part of story is setting. And so having games that are played in places like that, like, yes, you get to do a bunch of like dumb, like B tape, you know, on the roll in of like great Rose Bowl games, you know, like that helps set the stage. Like, you don't, what are you going to do for like the, whatever the, what, I don't even know what the stadium in for Reliance, whatever the hell it is in Houston, right? Like, what are you going to do? Like,
I don't know.
There's been a few good Texans games here, you know, like,
yeah.
And you can go back and do the B roll of like other national title games and like big moments and stuff like that. But like, the fact that you can't rely at all on the setting, I think, is important. And I do think for college football in particular, like, part of what I think people like about college football versus pro football, you know, like, and I think what can attract people more to college football than pro football is like the ties that you have towards, like, whether it's your alma mater, or whether it's like, this is, I mean, like when I was a kid, we drove down to Laramie and went to games, you know, like with my dad and my grandpa, like I'll always have those memories at War Memorial Stadium. Sometimes at like, you know, like 8 above 0 in November. And those, like those memories and those ties, you know, like in the tradition, cause like college football teams are not building new football stadiums all the time. Like for like, I mean, they can't afford to, they're not pro teams. So they are just often renovating their existing stuff. So like the tradition stays there, but to lose, I mean, like, I think to continue, like one of the more exciting things about, you know, the new playoff is like the first round games potentially being on campus. You know, that's great. Like having the games on campus is a big win for like college football. Because I do like, but I do think when you get to the point where you're talking about, and I don't know, like, I mean, I've never been to a Super Bowl, but like we bought Super Bowl ads for people, and you get a bunch of tickets. Like, you buy a Super Bowl ad, you get tickets, right? But like the Super Bowl, which is like super sterile and like it's full of people that don't really care who wins because they're just there to go to the Super Bowl. I think that kind of stuff, like, you can start to get there with college football. And I think one of the things that could pull it back is like putting the game in the Rose Bowl, and bring more of the tradition. Cause like, I mean, like take, for example, like, I don't, honestly, I have no idea what the NCAA is doing sometimes. But like the FCS championship game is in Frisco, Texas. And it's there every That's year awful. For very dumb. I don't know why it shouldn't be. It's in no way should it be in Frisco, Texas. The FCS championship game should be somewhere great, like somewhere fun or like on campus, like the other games are or something like that. And I understand the desire to have, you know, at a neutral site or something, but like Frisco, Texas is just such a strange place to plop it down. And there's like almost no personality or anything, even though it's been there for a little while. And it had like, I mean, I guess if they left it there for long enough, it would become like Omaha for the College World Series, right? Like, where it would be like super cool that it's always there, that kind of thing. But you know, and they're playing it on a Sunday against some NFL games. They're just like, guys, like manage your product a little better, right? Like, let's get the most out, like have it be the lead up to the, you know, national title game or something like that. So I'm very confused as to why people react so viscerally. I mean, I get it. Like, what I don't get though is like Godfrey's coming out of like, you know, like the SEC, which is so self, I mean, like complaining about self-importance and a bunch of navel gazing about the Rose Bowl when like that is literally all the SEC does all the time. Is a bit rich, right? Like, I mean, I like, but like the fact that like the Rose Bowl like pissed off a bunch of like people in the SEC because it, like the SEC and the ACC and maybe the Big 12, I guess, because it like wanted to stick to the tradition of the Pac-12 and the Big 10, like, and it sticks in the craw of a bunch of people that frankly I don't even think watched all that much football aside from the SEC sometimes, right? Like,
because that rivalry matters. Like, I grew up in Southern California for 18 years. I cared until the bowl started to fall off in importance. I cared. That's the only game I cared about outside of like the national title game. It was always who is the West Coast playing against. And that's the whole point of college football. It's these regional rivalries and like the history of them. Like I cared. I might not have watched. I mean, I watched the game every year, but like I might have not have watched Illinois football all year. But when they made it to the Rose Bowl, I'm like, oh snap, Illinois is in the Rose Bowl. Let's see who's playing. Like it was so interesting. And like I guess one last thing, you know, Bud Elliott kind of went off on this a little bit too, where they're like, oh, well, they're holding up the Orange Bowl kickoff because of a sunset. Well, yeah, like when I watched the Rose Bowl, like the change in the setting of the Rose Bowl over the course of the game, I think is really interesting. Like that's cool. It's beautiful. Like, you know, it starts really light. It's dark on the East Coast. You tune in, it's still light, you know, in California. And then it changes over the course of the game. That's the whole, like, that's why they have it.
I mean, are we really in a hurry to get to Hard Rock Stadium? Like that completely absurd, sterile, like, I mean, does anybody even go see the Dolphins there? I just kind of feel like it's like, I just kind of feel like I feel continually saying like, what are we doing? Right. Like, cause that kind of stuff, like, again, from like a pure narrative perspective, like it did, like using the Rose Bowl like that would be like, I mean, it's like free money. Like if you're like a TV producer, it's free money. Like, I don't understand. Like, don't turn down free money, you know, like go propose that to the Rose Bowl, because it will be like playing the College World Series in Omaha. Like you can just show like, I mean, it's like the setting matters.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. All right. Well, let's break down this game, Arizona. Oh my gosh. Michigan, Washington. And let's do it right after this. All right. We're back. We got one more game to preview, the national title game. Number one, Michigan, number two, Washington. Michigan came opened as a 4.5-point favorite. They are now a 5-point favorite. The money shifted a little bit. This matchup is great. Like we talked a little bit about this before, Rob. Total contrast in styles. Even in the coaching, right? You have Caleb DeBoer that's like really quiet, and Jim Harbaugh that wants to yell at anybody that like dares like look at him differently. You have Michigan.
I mean, what did he say? Like Jesus would have been a 5-star. That was my. Personal favorite Harbaughism of the, you're just like, dude, like it's like he's drinking unpasteurized milk again or something.
my personal favorite this week was comparing himself to Moses.
Yeah,
that was
the one like Moses, like, oh, he may not make it to the promise. They're just like
total contrast in styles. Michigan's going to want to run the ball. They have a great defense. Washington's going to want to throw the ball. They have an okay defense that's facing a team that, I mean, you have a great quarterback in Washington. You have an okay, like, I don't think J.J. McCarthy's really good, period. No. I don't think. And so you have that matchup, which is like, you know, both teams want to do different things. What do the numbers say here? I mean, this is just such a cool, and where's Washington now? Like, you know, I know you're getting all this, like, you know, of course, you know, your team wins and all you want to do is like, is shove it in everybody's face. So I'm sure Washington fans are like, oh, wait, where are we now?
What's I mean, they're at number 8 overall in beta rank. I mean, Michigan's only up at number 3, right? I mean, you know, like, and it's, I mean, look, I mean, if you recall the Vegas, like somebody put out some somebody got a Vegas bookmaker to put out some like possible lines if like Oregon had beaten Washington, and Oregon would have been favored over Michigan, right? Like Georgia would have been favored over Michigan had they won, right? Like those are probably like those teams did not play well when it counted. But those are probably your overall, like if you were going to randomly draw a team, you know, like who's going to beat that team by the most, it's Georgia and Oregon. So like Washington's definitely closed the gap with that performance against Texas. And Michigan moved up one from 4 to number 3 overall with that performance against Alabama. But this is a really interesting matchup. I mean, you've got an offense for Michigan that comes in at number 10 overall in beta rank. They're number 3 overall in drive efficiency. That's not all that surprising when you think about an offense that tends to run the ball a lot and is and relies on the run in order to put up points. They're not a terribly explosive offense. And when you talk about McCarthy, right, like he's not likely to get you for a lot of big plays. And they don't have a lot of really big play, you know, like players at the skill positions. They're at 29 overall in play efficiency, which is their yards per play outside of explosives, which isn't great, which again tells you like they have to be able to sustain drives, right? Like they're not putting up a big yards per play number. They're at 10 overall in negative drives. They don't have a lot of three and outs or turnovers. They're at number 9 in effective rush versus 14 in effective pass. Now, the contrast here is they get a Washington defense that has been creeping up. They're at 22 overall in beta rank. They're only at 18 in drive efficiency. You can put together drives to put up points against them. They're at 41 in explosive drives. And if Michigan were more explosive, like that would be a real problem. But it will be interesting to see here if Michigan can find a way to put up some big plays against this Washington defense, because it is something they've been susceptible to. They're at 27 in play efficiency. They're only at 30 overall in negative drives. That's going to be something to keep an eye on. They haven't forced a lot of three and outs and a lot of turnovers this season. No big run pass split. They're at 29 in effective rush versus 28 in effective pass. Now, what will be interesting, I think, is to keep an eye on the field position battle here, because the more Washington can put, like, I mean, Washington's average starting field position for their defense is at the 20, like it's just even shy of the 25, which is good kick coverage. And they're often scoring and then their opponent's having to get the ball back, right? So their defense usually has a lot of field to work with. Michigan's average starting field position is almost the 35. So it will be interesting to see. That's a pretty big split between where these teams usually find themselves starting out, like who ends up winning the field position battle. Because I think more than Washington's offense, I think Michigan's offense is going to need some shorter fields. Like the longer they have to continue to sustain those drives, the more likely it is Washington can find a way to get off the field. Now, BetaRank, I will say too, like the naive spread, which has been tends to be a little bit high because it does factor in seasons with higher scoring, as well as before the rule change about speeding up the clock, is at 5.22 on the naive spread, which is just a pure power rank spread. Now, it's the number 5 offense for Washington against the number 5 defense for Michigan. And they are like mirror images of each other. Like, so Washington's at 20 overall in drive efficiency. Michigan's at 24 in drive efficiency. So like Michigan, you can put together some long drives on them, but Washington is less efficient at sustaining drives. They are much more big plays. They're at number 4 in explosive drives. Michigan's number 3 at containing big plays. But to keep an eye, like another thing to keep an eye on here is that like, offenses are just, we live in the era of offense, like being number 4 in explosive drives, like Washington is going to be able to put up some big plays in this game. But something to keep an eye on is that Michigan's DBs do actually play the ball, something Texas's DBs did not do very well in their game. And this Michigan defense, not this season where Ohio State was not this high flying offense because of their quarterback, but in years past has been, they have built this defense with an idea of slowing down a highly explosive passing offense because they faced the Buckeyes, and like the year before under Stroud, they were more effective. They may have also known what was coming. Now, play efficiency wise, Michigan's a star here. They're at number 2 in play efficiency, limiting yards per play outside of explosives. One to watch here is Washington is number 5 in negative drives. They do a really good job of avoiding three and outs, avoiding turnovers. Michigan's at number 7 on negative drives. They did a really good job making the offensive line for Alabama look really incompetent in that game. Like Washington,
especially early.
Yeah,
holy
yeah.
smokes. They got in over and over, like
yeah.
5 sacks in the first half. Now Alabama figured it out, but
yeah,
those plays still counted.
Yeah. Now Washington's number 99 in effective rush. They don't run the ball a ton. That is a choice. Now Michigan's number 3 in effective rush. They're tough to run the football on. Washington's 3 in effective pass. Michigan is 6 in effective pass. Now the starting field position, again, there is a bit more here. Like Washington's average starting field position is at the 31. Michigan is also like right about the 25. Their defense also usually gets some pretty good field position. I just think because of the way Washington can score, it's the field position battle is less important for their offense. Something, another thing to keep an eye on here, Michigan before that game against Alabama was number 1 overall in special teams. They fell all the way down to 5 after a pretty disastrous special teams game. Now Washington's at number 12. I don't expect Michigan to have that kind of very, very bad special teams day they had against Alabama. If they do, that would be really bad. I mean, it's like, I think that like that, I mean, that's the stats portion of it, but I mean, like this game is going to come down to like, can Michigan slow down Washington? I think Michigan is going to be able to largely not have to, like, if Washington tries to run the ball, I don't think Michigan's going to have to load up the box to slow them down.
Yeah.
It's going to come down to Washington's ability to throw the football against this really good Michigan secondary, and a good pass rush. Can they keep? I mean, the line gets a lot of credit. Penix should get a ton of credit too for avoiding sacks.
He's a magician.
Yeah,
like it's so fun. Yeah,
but then I mean, you flip it around. I mean, can this Washington team stop? I mean, this is the probably the best rushing attack they're going to face, right? Like, and there's nobody really like it. Like people keep coming to like comparisons for this year. They're like, oh, Michigan will just do what they did against Penn State. Penn State's nothing like Washington, right? Like nothing at all. They're a completely non-explosive offense. They have a really good defense as opposed to Washington just having a pretty good defense, right? Like this is, they're completely different teams. And like Washington hasn't faced anyone that can run the ball like this, right? Like,
well, Oregon, I mean, like
Oregon can run the ball pretty well, but this Oregon team was actually built around throwing the ball this season, oddly enough. Now Oregon does have a good line. They were at 22 in effective rush. Oregon was at number one in effective pass this season. Like Nick slung it. Like they had a really good year throwing that football around.
What about Oregon State?
Now Oregon State, yes. Like now they do have a good. Now they do have a good offensive line. But I would. I mean, they're at number. They were at number 19 in effective rush. 17 in effective. I mean, effective pass this year. I'm interested. Like, I mean, this Michigan squad, it's a better offense, you know, than that Oregon State offense. And they play a lot of heavy, right? Like two tight end sets. I'm interested. Like, I mean, look, I mean, this game will be over if Washington is able to slow down Michigan's rushing attack. But here's the thing, like the predicted score, which relies more on the matchup specifics rather than just a pure power rank, has it Washington 29.77 to Michigan 23.78. And that is because Washington is so explosive, right? And that they should be able to put up points against this, and that Michigan is going to have to sustain drives, right? And that's hard to do. So like right now, I mean, despite the fact that Michigan, like if you do a random team, the model thinks, hey, like Michigan's going to beat that team by more than Washington will. If you draw a random team based on the specifics of the matchup, it likes Washington to win this game. That's why I think like the line moving up is a little surprising. I do think it's probably right. Like Michigan might have more ways to win this game. Washington tends to do one thing really, really, really well. Than Washington does, but like the model just thinks in this case, like Washington just does that thing really well, and they're going to do it well again.
Yeah, I do think like a couple things worry me about Washington. The first is the games in which they played teams that had good rushing attacks. They gave up 31 to Oregon. They gave up 33 to Oregon. They gave up 24 to Arizona, which had a good rushing attack, not as good as what they're going to face. And they gave up 20 to Oregon State in the rain. That game was kind of wonky. And then 28 to Utah. This Michigan team is better than all of those teams running the football.
I mean, now Washington fans so will be like, but that second half against Utah. And I'm like, yeah, but the first half still counts.
Yeah, it counted. Yeah.
Like, to an awful Utah offense.
they did shut it down in the second half. But to your point, yeah, that first half mattered. That worries me. I also think what we saw against Texas was the best that you're going to see out of Penix. Like that was almost a perfect game.
It was
Washington game.
Yeah. That was as good as he'll ever look.
Yeah. When Washington's wide receivers are open, he just slings the ball like a champ. Like, you know, when they have one or two steps, the difference here was Texas's corners were kind of all over Washington wide receivers. And he still put it where he needed to. That is a big ask against an even better secondary in this.
Yep.
So I don't know if you get the explosion that you see and that you saw in the Texas game that you've seen when everybody's healthy against poorer secondaries.
Well, and the best part of the Texas defensive line, and there was a lot of talk about the Texas defensive line coming in, is the interior of that line, right? Like their ability to like soak up double, and like it was less about the ends. And I think the with Michigan, it is about the ends, right? Like, look, I mean, like I'm interested. Like, I think Michigan's going to get more pressure on Penix. Like, I think that's probably likely to happen. I think their corners are going to like Washington's going to have to earn it in this one in a way like that. I don't want to say they didn't earn it against Texas, but like in a way against Texas where like they were just so on offensively.
Yeah.
I just think Michigan is going to disrupt some of that more than Texas did. Like, but that said, like, I mean, this Michigan offense can just go wandering off.
Yeah. Yeah.
like that, like we talked about like a little bit of, I mean, and some of this is true too. Like since they've had to stop stealing everyone's signs, they have fallen off a little bit. And they're just a less explosive, less interesting offense than they were. I mean, being at number 10 overall in beta rank is that's not a great offense, right? You know, and the gap between them and Washington has shrunk. You know, that Washington defense has been playing better over the season. That offense is getting worse over the season. I guess my concern is like, we saw a really, really good game plan. I want to say clearly like giving Nick Saban and company time to game plan, in particularly defensively, like that's, you might struggle, you know, like that might be a hard game. And it was, but like Michigan just disappeared. For just such a long period of that game. That's what kind of like, I mean, I think DeBoer and company, can put together a really good game plan, there. And I think the real matchup to maybe keep an eye on is against Michigan. Michigan's got a really good defensive coordinator. I think that, that's the matchup to really keep an eye on. I think Washington's defense isn't great. I'm just not sold on like, that part where they just disappeared to me was just shocking. Like where Michigan, I was like Michigan, I expected them to come out of the second half and like put up some points, like, and maybe put the game away a little bit. And oh buddy, did they not? They went totally silent.
Yeah. I think the last thing on that front too, is I don't think there's a coaching advantage. I mean, DeBoer is excellent.
Yeah, yeah.
Great play caller. But what Harbaugh's done throughout the season, just switch, right? I think was at Penn State where they're like, you know what? Screw it. Just run the ball 7,000 times.
Yeah.
And like just the ability to look at what's going on and then change things quickly. The game plan that they had to get to Jaden Milroe in the Alabama game from the defensive front was really, I mean, like basically Saban said, yeah, we hadn't seen any of those looks all year.
Yeah.
And there's just the willingness to throw new things and try new things. I'm so excited. This is going to be such a fun game to watch. And I don't think it's going to be a blowout either way. I think Washington's going to be able to do enough to put points to be competitive.
Right.
It's just, can they stop the run? I don't know if they can. I think that's the saving grace for Michigan. It's just, they have that gear where they can literally hit pause and say, you know what? JJ McCarthy sucks. We're going to run the ball 17 times. Stop us.
Yeah.
And I don't know if Washington will be able to do that.
Well, you flip it.
And McCarthy's good enough to throw the slant route or throw a quick post route to at least like keep the defense honest from Washington. That's going to be a problem, I think.
Well, and I think if you flip it to, you know, like Michigan is likely going to be able to get themselves out of some like field position holes, right? Like just by being able to run the football, maybe they're not able to get down and score, but they can sustain enough of a drive to flip the field. And they're probably going to be able to do that a lot in this game. Do they leave Washington with bad enough field position that like Washington might have to hit like four or five explosives in order to put up points? Like that on its own is tough, right? Like, I think Michigan probably has like the clearest path to victory here, you know, like I think, you know, like, you know, being able to run the ball, you know, seems easier, right? Like, I'm just interested is like, I mean, cause like Bama was loading up the box, right, against Michigan, right? Like, and Michigan Michigan did not have answers at first for that. I'm interested to see if they have a better, like, I think, like I said, like, I think they've got a really, really good defensive coordinator. I thought they had a really, and we talked about Alabama's defensive game plan. Michigan had a really good defensive game plan too here. They're going to have another really good game plan for this Washington team. But I will also, I mean, like Washington's gone in, against some really good. I mean, like Pete Kwiatkowski is a guy we know, you know, with the Texas D, and he's a really good coordinator who usually has really good game plans, and he trusted his corners a bit in coverage, right? Like, and they, you know, got burned. I'm interested to like how, like if you're Michigan, you know, like, you know, like how much, you know, quarters coverage can you run? How much, you know, three high safety can you run? Can you get pressure on? I mean, if they can, and also occasionally get pressure on Penix, that's fine. I think the one here, like, here's the game plan that I actually think could hurt Washington is Arizona's game plan that they had defensively. And that's the one, like, Arizona took away big plays. They did, and they made Washington march up and down the field to put up points. Like, if Michigan, like, and the thing was, is like, Arizona's just not good enough. Like, Arizona is just not good enough to pull that game plan off. It was still a really good game plan, right? Like, for that Washington team, Arizona was able to largely force Penix into checkdowns. Now, they hit some big yards on those checkdowns and things like that, but I think Michigan could actually do that and maybe cover down the checkdowns. Like, Texas did not try to take away the big plays at all, which is unusual for Kwiatkowski, because his whole thing used to be the too high safety look. You know, like, that was his MO at Washington. I'm super interested to see, like, I mean, what does Michigan roll out with? Do they try to take away big plays? Now, Washington took what Arizona was giving them. I just think against a Michigan defense, like, that Arizona defense improved a ton this season. They're not great, right? Like, you could, you know, and what if Michigan could take away deep and get a little pressure on Penix so that, you know, he's having to get the ball out to the check down faster, which you would, if they could do that, then this could be a really long day for Washington, right? Like, that, I mean, I am clearly not the defensive coordinator somewhere for a reason, but that's what I'm, one of the things I might try as my game plan there. But you flip it as like, if you're Washington, what are you going to do? Because like, I don't like, if Sarkisian committed more to the run and they didn't have the fumbles, like I you know, Texas could have put up more points in that game. Like, relying on Ewers, who was having a bad night, was a bad idea. But do you think, like, I mean, I guess my question for you is like, what do you think happens when if Washington commits to 9 in the box, like Tabama was starting to do? Do you think Washington has, because like, here's the thing, Alabama has really, really good corners, like guys that are going to go, you know, like day one or early on day two in the NFL draft. Washington doesn't have those guys. Not like, they have some guys, but they don't have those guys, you know, where you can load the box and take away Michigan. Like, can Washington do that?
And I think McCarthy's good enough to hit the easy stuff, right? I think Michigan's the better team. I think Michigan wins, but I think Washington just plays close games and they have an offense that's going to keep them in and they have a chance to win. Like, I mean, it was interesting when I was thinking through this, you know, because Michigan has a bunch of pros and all that stuff, but I just think Washington's offense is so dangerous that I do think that they stay in this game. If they stay in this game behind a touchdown, or if they stay in the game, they're up two, and then Michigan kind of grinds things away and takes the lead. I think all those things are possible. I'm probably laying the 5 just because I have to pick.
Right.
I really do think this is a competitive, excellent football game that Washington has a chance to win. That's how I put it.
Yeah. I mean, anybody in this game finishes plus one on turnovers, they're probably walking away with a win.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
What do you think?
I'm taking the Huskies, man. Like, I think the Huskies, like, I think the likelihood that we end up with, like, look, if we end up with some wonky Penix Arizona State performance, I don't know, man. Like, I mean, those do exist. Like, it's possible.
Yeah.
But I just feel like, and I'm not a big clutchiness person, but I do feel like Penix, like, I feel like they're like, he seems to hit something in big games. Like, he's done it against Oregon twice, did it against Texas. I think he's likely going to have another really good game. And the receivers are going to show up, and they're going to have a good game plan there. You know, I think, you know, what's an interesting wild card in this is like JJ McCarthy running, like, he's super athletic. They don't run him a ton. Mm-hmm. But that could be a wrinkle if I was Michigan. Because like I honestly, like, I don't think, like, I mean, people really like Sharon Moore. Like, he may be, I think he may be a future head coach. Like, I don't know that he's a future. I don't know that he should be Michigan's play caller for the future, though.
Yeah. And I apologize. I mean, I would take the points. I mean, I just, Washington just plays close games that I think they have a chance of keeping this close. We'll keep a lookout for that. That's really interesting. Well, it's going to be an awesome game. It's a great matchup. I'm so glad that both like teams are undefeated. You have a Pac-12, you know, champion in the actual championship for the national title. We'll probably do a breakdown, like recap of this, and then we got to go back to the workshop to kind of figure out
the transition to like picking a name even.
Yeah, that's right. So stay with us. If we, I do think we'll do one more breakdown of the national title game. I'm sure there'll be some movement in the portal that we can cover. Then after that, give us a little bit of a break while we work through some stuff here. And we'll be back and better than ever in a conference that's freaking weird. Yeah. So,
hello, Rutgers.
Oh, Lord Almighty. All right. Well, thanks everybody for tuning in, and we will catch you next week.